IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Joining us for the Israel Report, all the way from Israel, Rolene Marks. Rolene, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, and I'm already having separation anxiety.
Yes, because of course this is our last Friday until January.
You know I struggle with this, Howard.
All right, but you know what? I think you'll do just fine. But that's why I asked you today to take a look back at the big Israel stories for 2020. And I know it's not easy, because when we look back and we think, oh my gosh, that was January. It feels like January 20 years ago, such the year that it's been.
Well, I tell you, this year has felt like the longest decade ever. But it was really hard to distill, you know, what have been the biggest headline-making stories. I know that two very much stand out for us. One is the COVID pandemic and how Israel has navigated that. And the other, of course, is the Abraham Accords, which has been a real game changer in the region and just seems to be the gift that keeps on giving. And I mean that in the best possible light. And then, of course, there have been stories in between. You know, Israel is such a democracy that we have to prove it every now and then with another election.
Right.
It looks like we
over
could possibly be
again.
Heading there soon. And it also has very much been the year of women. And we can get to that later. But let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start, somebody once said. And with COVID-19 and just how Israel has managed that, come through that, some of the criticisms, some of the wins. And I think that we can all agree that during the first wave, Israel had a kind of a firm grip on the pandemic. We responded very, very quickly. We locked down very quickly, and we managed to keep those statistics low. And there was a lot of debate, you know, why has Israel been so successful? Is it because we are a country where we are very military orientated, so we're used to taking orders? Clearly, anybody who says that has not been to a supermarket any time lately. Or driven on our roads, but anyway. But we are a country that's used to very quickly mobilizing in times of challenges or in times of danger. And we came through that, you know, relatively low scathed. And then we went into our... And people said to me, you know, what's happening to Israel? The wheels are starting to come off. The government can't seem to control this. This doesn't seem to be working. And I have to admit, I was a little bit put out with this, you know, this focus on criticizing Israel, because it seems to me that no country has managed to get a firm grip on this pandemic. We really are or really have been in uncharted waters.
Everybody's floundered and bumbled their way through it.
You know, I don't think it's been easy. There have been countries that have handled it even worse. You know, we're not going to point any fingers at the United States or anything there. But, you know, I thought that this incredible criticism on Israel and the way we're trying to navigate the second wave and a lot of talk this week, because our numbers have come up slightly, and this is because we have had some people not behaving, and they're just slightly above that 1,000 threshold, which seems to be our benchmark, and discussions, are we headed perhaps into a third wave of coronavirus? You know, it's highly likely that we will either be locked down for Hanukkah or at least curfews imposed on us. I mean, Howard, I'm very, very upset to tell you that I haven't been assaulted by a Sufganiya yet.
What?
I haven't had my calorie intake for this.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, that is ridiculous. Why?
And only with 6 days to go. You know, normally we are assaulted.
Yes.
With the different kinds of sufganiyot.
Well, it's obviously been that kind of a year, clearly.
It has been that kind of year. And I know that there will be some kind of sense of normality when I can walk past a bakery and I'm spoiled for choice. But the good news coming in this morning is that we will possibly be getting 4 million of the COVID jabbers this month, and we'll start our vaccination rollout. I know that the UK is planning theirs, and I have to say that I actually felt quite emotional looking at the images of trucks rolling in and the Royal Army undertaking their run-throughs of how to make sure people are vaccinated. It felt really like there was some kind of light on the horizon, and hopefully it's there for Israel. The health officials are preparing to inoculate about 80,000 people a day. This bill has to be discussed, you know, with our Ministry of Health, with the FDA, et cetera, et cetera. Just, and I know there's a lot of debate around vaccines at the moment.
So when you look back at the year, is it really primarily, from an Israel perspective, an Israel news, is it really COVID, and COVID, Abraham Accords, and elections?
That's what it looks like to me, with a few little mini stories in between. And I have to say, you know, for Israelis who are such a sociable, such a tactile bunch of people, to have been locked up for a year, we haven't had a single hug that we've been able to spend together. Not our, from Pesach, not to Shavuot, Simchat Torah, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, you know, the big five. And not even to our national days, Yom HaShoah, Yom HaZikaron, which was particularly difficult because, you know, we hold bereaved families in our hearts, to Yom HaAtzmaot. It has been, you know, for Israelis on so many different levels, and I'm sure for other countries, so difficult because it really feels like a year in which we lost our identity.
Yeah, and you wonder what it takes then to get it back. Does everything just go back to normal, or do we, you know, is 2021, assuming that that the vaccine rollout is successful and life gets back to semi-normal, even if it's only, let's say, from the second quarter, but I wonder if 2021 will be our year of appreciation, where we'll actually appreciate the Chagim, the festivals that we can spend together, where we appreciate the things that we couldn't do in 2020. Wouldn't that be cool if 2021 was a year of appreciation?
I'm hoping it will be. It certainly will be my year of appreciation. You know, I've said to friends so often these past weeks that I don't think I'll ever take it for granted, you know, going to the gym or going to have a cup of coffee with a friend, going to a restaurant, you know, it's to go to the mall. I was at the mall yesterday. Ours are still closed. Only the super farm is open and one or two other shops. And it really made me sad. And I want so much for our businesses to thrive and to come out of this. And I think, which leads me into the next one, you see how I segue.
I mean, it was seamless, Raleen, seamless.
Seamless, I tell you.
Yeah.
Must be all that coffee I had this morning. But I think that the Abraham Accords are going to contribute a lot to this. I mean, what really tickled me this week was that the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, they celebrated their National Day. And I don't know if it's because we haven't been able to celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut or we were just so excited, but Israelis really got in on the celebration action. You know, nothing is ever confirmed unless the Tel Aviv municipality lights up its municipal building.
Yeah.
And of course, we lit up in the colors of the Emirati flag to celebrate their National Day. We all took to Twitter. There were Zooms. You know, it was really celebratory in Israel. I mean, it's absolutely unprecedented. So let's look at the Abraham Accords and what has transpired out of it, because it's actually quite extraordinary. And here you have to give it to the Trump administration. You know, what they've managed to achieve in the Middle East during these 4 years has been extraordinary. You know, everybody calm down. You know, whether you like him or loathe him, you have to give this to President Trump and Jared Kushner, their team who worked, and I include Jason Greenblatt in this, the team that has worked tirelessly. I never thought I'd see a day when I would announce on Chai FM that we have normalization with the UAE. But also, it's all the components that are making up these accords. It's Bahrain adopting IRA, where other Western countries that they talk about, you know, fighting anti-Semitism and racism, they haven't adopted IRA. It's the comments coming yesterday from the Bahrain Minister of Trade. IRA, of course,
being the international definition of anti-Semitism, for anyone who isn't familiar with that.
Yes, IRA is not just our great friend called IRA, but IRA is the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition. Yesterday, the UK Premier League.
I thought that was an incredibly important story, actually, that the Premier League adopted the definition.
All except for one club, which is Sheffield United, and nobody's quite clear why.
Yeah, because no one supports them.
Because
that's why no one supports them.
Exactly. I mean,
which one is Sheffield? Which one is Sheffield? I don't even know. Do they play? We've never heard of Sheffield, have we?
I've never heard of
them. Here we go. You see, I didn't even set you up for that. I knew you hadn't. So they're the only ones that wouldn't accept it.
They haven't accepted it, but they have put down their criteria for fighting anti-Semitism, which reads almost identical to IRA. So, you know, good for them. Okay, all I know, Howard, is we're talking about the game with the round balls as opposed to the other game with the funny-shaped balls.
Yeah, fine, exactly. Exactly. And no, we will not take messages on that at all. So that's been an absolutely huge story. Of course, the Iranian story as well, starting to become important towards the end of 2020. Comments seem to be, and Israeli press reporting, that an Iranian retaliation is unlikely during the last days of Trump's presidency. It's much more likely to take place once Biden assumes office. That's a huge problem, isn't it, for Biden? It puts him in a very difficult position before he starts.
It is a problem, and there again we go back to, because it's all linked to the Abraham Accords. You know, while we want to say everything's, you know, let's braid each other as hair and sing kumbaya, there's also this element of the Iranian threat, and that has pulled countries in this region closer together. And there are still countries that are going to wait to see what the Biden administration, where they lie or where they get their lay of the land as they come into power before they agree to normalization. But I'm hoping that normalization is going to become the new normal in the region. You know, we're all looking to the Saudis because that's going to be the big whale that we get into the bag. But, yeah, the incredible news this year of the assassinations of Qassem Soleimani, one of the heads of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and then last week Mohsen Farajideh, who was the chief nuclear scientist ever. But he was not just a scientist. He was also a member of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, a very, very dangerous man. Now, immediately all fingers pointed towards Israel. Israel has a policy. We don't comment on these issues. But we also have to remember that we're not the only ones threatened by the Iranians. So we've also had the news in these last 70 days that the Trump administration would perhaps, or Trump at least, wanted to strike Iran before the end of his administration, and he was warned not to. What is very, very interesting, which came up yesterday, was that in response to an interview that President-elect Biden gave to Tom Friedman of the New York Times, where he said, you know, he's willing to go back into negotiations with the Iranians on the conditions that they accept certain criteria, and he would like to bring in the Emiratis and the Saudis. No mention of the Israelis, who decided that this time we are not being left out of the equation, and we have our own, we're planning our response there. And we heard from the Iranian foreign minister, Mohammad Zarif, who said in no uncertain terms and in very succinct language, he said, absolutely not. We have no intentions of re-entering the agreement with the Biden administration if they're going to put us under certain criteria. And he says that basically you get what you give. So some harsh words for the Biden administration coming from Iran. So it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. It's really going to be their first test. There is no question about it. And it's how he, certainly in terms of international or foreign policy, this one is going to challenge him.
And we do have to just remember one thing. The Biden, as opposed to Obama, is much more skilled as a foreign policy leader than Obama was. He's much more focused on foreign policy than President Obama was. So let's see what happens. It's certainly going to be interesting. And, hey, why not let's throw in an Israeli election into the
mix? Yes, just to make things more volatile. It is 8 o'clock. Rolene Marks, thank you as always. Awesome to chat to you.
I missed you already.
We'll speak in January.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.